morning, Montreal. You are tuned to the Wednesday Morning After. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando. We have a stacked show for you today. In fact, an arts and culture extravaganza. From the first interview comes Yoga on the Park studio, where Julie Nadler and Malcolm McLean are there to answer all your questions about yoga. The second interview is from Tim Rodrigues of the Siegel Theatre and Black Theatre Workshop. Tim has designed a lighting installation called Liberation's Radiance, which is on display outside the Siegel Center evenings between 5:30 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. The third interview is with Bobby Bedochka. She is the author of Sexuality in Business, a book about sexual power in the workplace. 8 o'clock brings Democracy Now, 8:15 brings Weather, and we'll wrap up the show. Let's start the day off with some music.
Baby.
Valentine's Day 2021, Yoga on the Park Online continues its tradition of Valentine's couples yoga. Almost a year into the pandemic, couples who have been stuck together at home need ways to refresh their relationship, their modes of experiencing each other, and their ability to work cooperatively. That is what Yoga on the Park Online is offering with its couples yoga workshop on Valentine's Day. We have with us today Julie Nadler and Malcolm McLean of Yoga on the Park Studio. Hi, Julie and Malcolm, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheila. Nice to be here.
First, please introduce yourselves and tell us how you came to be involved in Yoga on the Park.
I've been teaching yoga since about 2003, and Yoga on the Park Studio is a pretty important part of the NDG community. So I was teaching there when the Joannes, Joanne Ransom and Joanne Gormley, had started that studio. So more recently, about 5 years ago, when they talked about selling the studio, it just seemed, in spite of my long-held principle of not owning a yoga studio, it just seemed like the thing to do.
I think both of us came from a background of we never wanted to own a business because we grew up with family-owned businesses. I'm Julie Nadler. I started teaching yoga in 2013, although I was a high school teacher for 35 years. And I found that has been many of the things I learned from doing that has been helpful with the yoga. And Malcolm and I have been running a bricks and mortar studio since 2016, April.
Yeah.
And now for almost a year, actually it'll be March 18th, we will have been running an online yoga studio. We closed on the 15th and reopened online on the 18th.
Of March last year.
Yeah.
What's the upcoming event on Valentine's Day?
We've been doing this for 5 years, 6 years?
Yeah, that's right. Couples yoga is a really interesting part of yoga, not sharing of saying, well, yes, you can do these postures, you can do these movements, you can do the breath and the focus and all those things. And then the possibility of doing them together adds a whole other dimension. And when it's it was originally thought of as like, oh, partners, you know, if you have to cooperate with the partner for anything. But then couples, that's even more more intimate, for sure.
And we emphasize the intimacy. We do some exercises that are not yoga, some eye contact exercises, breathing exercises together. We also do a little bit of, I guess, our spin on some Thai yoga massage that participants can do for each other. We've never done it online, so it will be interesting for us because actually the couple can create their own intimacy at home with perhaps candles or incense or music.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so we are interested to see how this might be different this year.
What are the costs involved in participation?
Well, quite low, actually, because it's online. We have dropped it down. We used to, I think, charge $80 a couple, but it's $20 each.
$40 a couple.
Yeah, we want to make it accessible to people. And that's been our mission since this began. Also, when we went online back in March last year, we were offering a lot of free classes. We wanted to help people through this. And we've tried to keep our prices as low as possible.
How does it work over Zoom cloud meetings?
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Malcolm's the technical person. So sometimes we do have people who have technical problems coming in. But each teacher, it has been an interesting journey, I think, to go from the person to person to teaching online. So it changes your contact with your students is actually deeper
because
you have an opportunity to talk to each other at the beginning of the class and after the class. And often with some people, you might be the only contact they have with anybody
that day.
So we're very conscious of that. But there's also bringing your personality across on screen is a little different from in person. You can't put a hand on a student and adjust them. You have to use your voice. What else do you think was said?
Well, on the plus side, there's a level of sharing that people have. First of all, people have a hunger for some kind of human connection. when they're stuck at home. And even as even couples together, you know, they fall into a routine, and maybe that's working fine. And then after some time, you need to either deepen it or refresh it or give it some new dimension. And that's what we're talking about, couples yoga. So that's where the couples yoga comes in. But for people who are taking an online course, you know, at the beginning on the screen, there, it's kind of like, if you remember the old Hollywood Squares TV show, there is everybody in their own little box on the screen. It's good for us. We have a very large screen, so we can still give some kind of useful feedback. And, you know, you might just turn your foot a little more inwards on that one so that you've got better balance or whatever it is. So we can still give verbal cues to people that way. But yeah, back to that, for the opening 15 minutes before the class actually starts, we have kind of a, people are arriving for 15 minutes, and often there's lots of gossip and sharing. And
yeah, they talk to each other, they talk to us.
Yeah, some old friends who are, you know, sharing that class together. So this is
a yoga drop-in center.
Exactly.
Almost, yes. Yeah. In fact, a couple of days ago, I learned that one of the people that I teach regularly twice a week actually knows one of your good friends from out in Hudson. Yeah. And someone else used to sing in a choir with someone whose children I taught when I taught at Hudson High School. So we're making some very special connections, I think.
You can even say, like, oh, that piece of art on the wall behind you. And you discover, oh, this person's a painter. Actually, she's been painting for decades and decades, and now she's having trouble because of her hands. And, you know, there's a story behind all kinds of things that are in people's homes.
And we've met their cats and dogs.
Yeah,
too.
Their cats and dogs.
And birds.
I don't know about you, but if you've been doing a lot of Zoom or even watching TV on the news channel, so while people are doing all these Zoom things, so I've become quite an inveterate checker out of the library behind them.
Right, right.
The
what books are they
what
reading?
What books are they they're showing on their library? Sometimes you'll lose the thread of the interview I had that
You're focusing on the book. Another thing I think changed was, this was something that I felt at the beginning when we went online, was how people needed reassurance, how people needed a little bit more, if you want to call it spiritual or encouragement, to feel good about themselves, to feel optimistic about the future, to deal with change. It was... and a lot of our students are our age group, you know, and as you get older, change becomes a little bit more difficult because you're unprepared for it. And we dealt with a lot of that at the beginning.
Correct.
People's fears.
Also dealing with people's fears of technology.
That too.
Especially, certainly there's lots of technophobia out there. And so there's some people who were at our studio before who have just simply fallen away. The idea of doing it online was just simply not part of their, just not part of their world.
On the other hand, we have a student who's 96 now, I think.
Right. She adapted.
And she came in that first week. And you worked hard. You spent a lot of time on the phone with her, getting her there. But she practices twice a week with us, 95 or 96 years old.
So, I've become kind of a technical support guy now, so... My phone is always there, and quite often, especially in the first few months, a lot of people are having problems of one kind or another.
And Zoom itself was expanding as well.
When I was in my 20s, I had a brief moment when I wanted to be an electronics technician. Well, that was actually about a year or two of training. Anyway, so bottom line is, here I am helping, being a tech support guy. So.
On that note, what is the value of teaching yoga in our modern world?
You know what? I think there's more value now than any other time. One of the things that Malcolm and I talk about a lot, because we're very different as teachers, even though we teach together sometimes, that whether it's a fast-paced class, like a power class, Ashtanga style, or whether it's a yin class, or restorative class. I teach a number of those. I think that what we're trying to get people to do is to move inward and be comfortable with themselves, self-acceptance, to be calmer, to face the challenges that they have to face at any time in history, in fact. And I think that yoga is much more needed now than it might have been in a less complex world.
Now, experience I had that, of yoga, because I've been practicing probably since my 20s, I guess, that we're all stuck in our heads, or in our particular society. I have this feeling of we live in our heads, and somewhere below the neck is kind of a disconnect. So for me, it was the first experience. Okay, I'm out of my head, I'm into my body, and it's not just about, you know, pain or pleasure, which, you know, you still can connect to, in no matter how disconnected you are, but actually to connect to your body, to get awareness into parts of your body, and to be aware of what's happening. I would think, you know, elite athletes get some of this too, out of necessity, to be able to be inside their bodies. And I think that one of the things that happens after you practice yoga for a while is you do get out of your head and into your body, and it's good for your mind and good for your body.
So what does yoga bring to people's lives?
Calm.
Yeah, we'll start there.
Yeah, calm.
Yeah.
Definitely knowing your physical challenges and limits more clearly. Fewer injuries, I think.
Yeah, and yeah. Just, you know, when you walk around the city, and you, how do you feel in your body when you're walking around? And in fact, you feel, well, how would I put it? How can you put it? Just a little more smooth, a little calm, more confident about your own movement, more aware of your own movement. So that's an intangible. It's hard to get a handle on. You could also say, hey, I got 10 for a while, you know, I was still playing golf, and I'd get an extra 10 or 20 yards out of my drive. So I suppose you could look at that one too.
Well, and when I first started practicing yoga, I didn't start till I was 60. I did other things. I was still a runner, and my run was so much better. I was more aware of myself and my body and possibility of injuries. My feet were more grounded so that there was less pain in my body completely. So it really upped my game in terms of, as you said, with your golf and me with my running, even at 60, you could feel the difference.
What aspirations did you have as a child that led you to where you are today?
Interesting, eh? You wanted to be a journalist and I wanted to be an actress.
Right.
Yeah. You ended up being a writer and I ended up being a teacher. I have often, I wanted to be an actress. I wanted to be in the theater, and I switched to teaching. And I have to say that teachers have to have some sort of persona. Teachers have to be able to hold inside any distress they might be feeling at the moment so that they can communicate with their students about their students and not about themselves. I think acting helped me do that.
Hmm.
And
right.
Language, we're both language people, and a lot of yoga is languaging. Helping our students visualize the way their body should feel or look.
I noticed that the two of you have a very good body chemistry. I noticed the way that you move together. I noticed the way you communicate. How did it start between you and Malcolm, Julie? Tell us about your romance.
Well, he was my yoga teacher. He was one of my first yoga teachers. I was 60. I just retired from teaching, and I decided to take up yoga. And I went to the NDGY, and Malcolm taught Wednesday nights.
Turned out that wasn't our first encounter.
No.
Yes.
I taught my first 10 years out at Hudson High School, and Malcolm actually went to Hudson High School.
My alma mater.
Yeah,
right.
Different eras, of course. But by the time I got to Hudson High School, his two youngest sisters were still there. So I did meet members of his family years before.
And Margaret did try to set us up at one point.
Yeah, back in the 80s.
Yeah. I think we had absolutely no interest.
It was just a sort of, I was into bad boys still back then. And you had two small children. I don't think that that was going to be any kind of meeting of the minds.
Yeah.
What changed?
I was older. You were older.
Both of us in a different phase of life.
Yeah, it's a perspective.
It is. And we came also, it's always interesting that I lived my life saying I never wanted to marry. And when I met Malcolm, he said he never wanted to get married again. Just like we both said, we run a business.
Own a yoga studio, right.
And we fit. Yeah. And it was interesting that we fit. And I guess all the experiences and past relationships we had tempered us.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Changed us. You know, we're like any other couple. We argue. But
yeah, I'm glad we didn't do this interview earlier this
morning. Yes, earlier. Well, it's hard being stuck in the same house with somebody. And that's why we recommend on Valentine's Day, people come and do some couples yoga. Maybe get a little bit of the fire back and the mystery back in.
When will Yoga on the Park reopen for live sessions?
Couldn't tell you. We're talking to our other teachers about what they want.
Because there's seven of us, actually, 15 classes and seven teachers right now.
And so we're talking about it, but the fact is, no, I never expected that we would be able to open until sometime this coming spring. And that's ever since we closed, that was my future perspective.
Now it looks like the fall.
Now, I wouldn't even say spring, maybe fall. And so that's the possibility of opening. Neither of us is particularly interested in going back into bricks and mortar.
It's a different management when you actually have a space you have to deal with.
We have a hard time answering that question. We're talking to our teachers about turning it into a cooperative, perhaps, and that way sharing the responsibility.
And it being a hybrid. So if they're would be a space that we practiced in. At the same time, people could come in online.
Yeah, for
sure. So we'd have big screens.
There's a number of our students who are saying they can't imagine coming back into a live class like that, in a studio like that. Because, it's hard to say for sure, but the truth is, for example, yesterday in the middle of a snowstorm, people were coming to a lot of people coming to classes that day. In fact, we had big classes, and people have been telling me this thing that, well, I don't have to get in my car. I don't have to shovel the snow off the car. I don't have to find a parking place down by your studio. I don't have to spend all that time in transportation. Just have to come over and turn on my computer and set things up and come to a class.
I would never, though, recommend that people just do hybrid, because there are certain things that we can't always help people with online. There's certain postures we can't teach online.
Yeah, I wouldn't teach a headstand online. It's one of those, rather risky postures, where if I can control the situation, as I can do inside a room in a studio, and say, now just like this, and be there to physically help somebody, that's how I would do a posture like that, which has some risk attached if you're not doing it correctly.
Well, even up into a shoulder stand or plow posture, I will only let people do that if it's part of their regular practice and they have been doing that for a long time.
How do listeners sign up for the Valentine's Day couples event?
On our website, Yoga on the Park Studio. Also, they could send an email. Would be
yops@gmail.com.
Is it YOPS?
Yeah, YOPS online.
@gmail.com. Yeah, we people have been buying classes and buying workshops online through our website, but they also have a very big email following. Where people are signing up through me and also e-transferring money.
That's another bit of, we were talking about the human connection or the personal connection. A lot of people are saying how much they appreciate, oh, you send an email and Julie gets back to you, just like that.
Yeah.
and there's a little byplay or weird humor that
sometimes
comes it's into that.
New relationships have formed and developed, and some of the people that we're with online right now, I consider friends.
So email is more fun than going to a clunky online site where you attempt to register for a class and pay for it and do all that
through our very cranky software.
We have that. We have a system that we find pretty cranky, and other people also find. In fact, we're in the process of changing it with a Montreal company that's developing some new software for us.
So they just get online or email us, easy, or even call Malcolm and he'll tell me what to do. In signing people up.
Do you want to give us Malcolm's phone number over the air?
514-231-7116.
You're going to be inundated with phone calls.
Bring it on.
So finally, what's the message you would like to bring people?
Stay safe.
Prends courage.
And you know, the challenges are opportunities. So much has changed, and yet one of the things that I try to have my students focus on is, you know, what are the good things that have come out of this? What have you learned that's good?
Find ways to keep moving.
Yes.
Julie takes a walk, every second day or so.
Yeah, I try
nice
to.
Big walk.
Yeah, yesterday I didn't.
My dog drags me out twice a day for a walk. Really good to keep moving,
just move.
Keep the body alive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't just settle and let things slide.
Well, we all had our, periods of Netflix. I think for the first couple of weeks when I wasn't teaching, I just watched Netflix lying on a bed. But that certainly didn't make me feel any better.
I'm glad you got back to yoga, Julie. I think that's great.
Yeah.
And I look forward to the Valentine's Day couples event.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for your interview today.
Thank you very much, Sheila. Yep.
Thank you, Sheila.
You've been listening to Julie and Malcolm speaking about Yoga on the Park Studio and their Valentine's Day event. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando. We'll be right back. The Siegel Center has been keeping busy with an ever-growing list of online programming for all ages and are proud to announce an outdoor free public art installation in partnership with Black Theater Workshop that will be taking place outside the Siegel Center during the month of February in honor of Black History Month. Liberation's Radiance, a light installation by Black Theater Workshop's artist-in-residence lighting designer Tim Rodrigues, will be displayed in loops and will be visible to passersby on the front of the Siegel Center, 5170 Chemin de la Côte Sainte-Catherine, every day starting at 5:30 p.m. To respect curfew guidelines, the installation will run until 7:30 p.m. every night, with more information regarding run times to be announced as restrictions and government guidelines are updated. With us today, we have superstar artist Tim Rodrigues. Hi, Tim, and welcome to the show.
Hello, thanks for having me.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be involved with the Siegel Theater and Black Theater Workshop.
My name is Tim Rodrigues. I'm a lighting designer. I collaborate with creators in contemporary dance, theater, and performance. I had a history of working at the Siegel Center as a lighting technician just after I graduated from theater school. And then in 2018, I designed the lighting for their production of Marjorie Prime. That spring, I was the technical director and line designer for the Black Theater Workshop Artistic Mentorship Program Showcase. So I came on to work with the directors in the mentorship program to design the lighting for their scenes, as well as the performers who wrote their own scenes. In the time since, I've been working on Black Theater Workshop productions, such as How Black Mothers Say I Love You, and I was named one of two designers in residence for their 50th anniversary season alongside Nalo Soyini. And that's in a nutshell my relationship with both organizations.
I heard some jingling in the background. Do you have a dog, Tim?
Yeah.
Do you want to introduce him? Oh, apologize.
It's Liko. He's our French bulldog.
Hi, Liko. Welcome to the show.
And he's named after a lighting instrument because that's what I do. Laura was like, it's a very interesting name. And it's like, yeah, it's a lighting instrument.
What does that lighting instrument do?
Liko is a brand name for an ellipsoidal instrument. So an instrument that's longer and usually has two lenses, a lens on the nose of the lamp and an internal lens, so that essentially the lighting beam comes out at different beam angles so mm-hmm. that they're wider. So if you were to hang them all top down, if you had a 10 degree quote unquote Liko and a 26 degree Liko and a 36 degree Liko, they would all be different sizes if they were hung at the same height. Mm-hmm. So the ellipsoidal lens, you know, my ignorance is showing a little bit, but the ellipsoidal lenses basically create different beam angles so that you can have larger or smaller beams.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
How are you going to express yourself at the Siegel Center during Black History Month? Please explain.
My lighting installation, Liberation's Radiance, is my offer for the occasion of Black History Month at the Siegel Center. This came about after essentially being commissioned by Quincy Armour, the artistic director of Black Theater Workshop, who was approached by Lisa Rubin, the artistic director at the Siegel Center, to collaborate on a lighting installation for Black History Month. As our theaters are closed, there is an opportunity to light up the Siegel Center and bring attention to the occasion of Black History Month. So my expression is through this lighting installation that was inspired by a few lines, a passage really, in a book that I read this past summer called The Water Dancer by Ta-Nehisi Coates. In the novel, there's a description of this spectral light that is central to one of the plot points in the story, so I don't want to say too much about it. It is in the my artistic statement, but it was really the impetus for what got me going as to how can I take a static lighting installation and create something that is engaging and in celebratory of Black History Month. So I kind of leaned into that. So it's through my medium of lighting design and lighting creation, light art really, that I'll be doing my expression.
What aspirations did you have as a child that led to your artistic expression?
As a child, I was very much into dancing. I wanted to be a break dancer, like in music videos. I wanted to be a tap dancer like Gregory Hines and my cousin, who was a tap dancer. I ended up studying in different dance disciplines. I was a competitive dancer as a child, so I studied tap, ballet. I got to high school. It was a fine arts high school. I started studying Lamon technique and Graham technique and Horton technique, which then ultimately I went to Concordia University to study for a BFA in contemporary dance. And it was during my BFA that I got into lighting design. Based on the program is based around choreography, so we'd have to work with a lighting designer. And it was these conversations with the lighting designer that really got me engaged in a new artistic discipline. But really it all came from my involvement in dance and wanting to be a dancer.
What else is going on in this partnership between the Siegel Center and Black Theater Workshop that our listeners may enjoy during Black History Month?
Right now, registration is open for the Zoom reflection calls that will be hosted by Kamana Tabirakuri, who's the artistic associate at the Siegel Center, in which some of the artists who are involved in the artistic mentorship program at Black Theater Workshop will read their reflections on the lighting design and discuss topics that come out of those reflections, as well as their own experiences as Black artists. So they're hosting these conversations with their artistic associate will be their, that's the other collaboration between the centers.
Why did you choose to do Liberations Radiance for the Siegel Theater and Black Theater Workshop?
Well, as I said, the work came out of the initial conversations with Quincy, who pretty much left it up to me as to how to best express myself through light for this occasion. And it really got locked in conversations that I had with Diane Tabirakuri about what the work can be and could be. Initially it came from this magical moment in the book, but it became so much more about quote unquote magic and more about this idea of liberation is an ongoing process. You know, it's a process that doesn't end until everyone is free. So leaning into that notion, I felt this was the right thing to do. There are lots of parallels that people can draw, I think, to a lighting installation that evokes a beacon of hope and a beacon of light guiding people out of darkness to a better situation. I really hope that people get into the history of freedom of that's not probably the right way to say, but I think the history of people moving along paths of liberation, because there's many examples throughout history. And I felt that through the tools that I have and the skills that I have, that this was the best way I could offer something for the occasion.
What effect do you hope to have on the community by letting people experience this artwork?
Well, ultimately, I hope this work is an entry point for people who may not have any familiarity with Black history in North America, so that they learn to hear Black voices and engage in Black history in ways that are not limited to events in the month of February, but then start integrating Black art and Black stories into their own lives. For the Black community, I hope that this artistic offering is accepted as a respectful work that uplifts notions of liberation through systemic change, protests, and conversations. I really want people to be able to see this and come away with this idea that I think all marginalized people and all people of all walks can share and do share stories of liberation in some way. And I want people to be able to use these shared stories of liberation to be a part of how we all observe and partake in this celebration of Black History Month.
What are your plans after Black History Month artistically?
Well, I'll continue working with Black Theater Workshop on some upcoming projects that we have. We had a postponed Grand Acts of Theater piece that was supposed to be an outdoor excerpt from the upcoming show, Black and Blue Matters. So I'll continue working on those projects as well as the upcoming season for 2021 and 2022 as a designer in residence. Also, I'll be designing some projects here in Montreal with the École de Danse Contemporaine Montréalaise and performance company called Creature.
Finally, again, where and when can Liberation's Radiance be seen and enjoyed by the public?
Can be seen and enjoyed every night during the month of February from 5:30 p.m. until 7:30 p.m. at the Siegel Center for the Performing Arts at 5170 Cote St. Catherine.
Thank you for your interview today.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Tim Rodrigues speaking about his lighting display, Liberation's Radiance, at the Siegel Center for Black History Month. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Early in the morning, before the sun rose, when the first bird sang, even while everyone was still asleep.
Morning. On that morning.
When the sun comes out.
This morning, baby.
Cock-a-doodle-doo. I hear the rooster crowing.
Now you must wake up.
Now every morning when I wake up,
I woke up this morning with
the kiss of the morning.
Got up 7:30 every morning. Had the same breakfast.
Réveillez-moi à 8 heures demain matin.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Riding a bike made of bacon and eggs.
In the morning.
In the morning.
The sun replace the moonlight.
Has this ever happened to any of you, or will it happen to any of you on the morning after the night before?
You are listening to The Morning After on CKUT 90.3 on the FM dial.
Entrepreneur, businesswoman, and mother of two, accidental author of Sexual Intelligence in Business, Bobby felt compelled to write this book in response to the new obstacles we face in a Me Too era when what appears to be a new form of sexual repression is brewing. With us today, we have Bobby Bedochka, author of Sexual Intelligence in Business. Hi, Bobby, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you became the author of Sexual Intelligence in Business.
Well, yes, I am Bobby. And so I work for a tech incubator during the day. I have a side company, Imagination, on the side, and also author of this book. And so I came to author this book because I just was noticing the environment in this post Me Too era where people are a bit confused and not sure about how to act or react. And it just seemed like there was a lot of topics that were getting thrown in the mix, sort of like don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And so I felt like I needed to stand up and say something about the environment and how people could sort of navigate that.
What was the education and professional background you acquired to give you the perspective to write Sexual Intelligence in Business?
I mean, I come from a political science, and so I studied also religion and gender studies, women's studies, but also it was just from being a professional and being an outspoken woman in business throughout the years and in a multitude of sectors that just gave me this really broad perspective to be able to speak from a lot of different vantage points.
How did your own professional background help you develop sexual intelligence? And how did it spark the desire to help others?
I mean, just by experiencing the things that you do when you're at work and dealing in business, especially in male-dominated sectors. So it became obvious to me of the types of things that could sort of be leveraged from a sexual intelligence point of view. Being something like erotic capital or, negotiation styles, things like that. And it just, in a post Me Too era, people were starting to get a bit buttoned up and overly conservative. And I felt like that was a bit tragic because there's lots of really great aspects to being human that we should embrace. And so I decided, why not write this book and help others?
Love, sex, and power are primal components of the human behavior. Why do you think that these elements affect business and careers and that they are the engines that drive everything?
I mean, like it says, it love and sex is the ultimate end game for everyone. And, you know, business and power, you could say, are a means to an end. And so these concepts are inextricably linked. The only reason why we are in business or seek power is so that we can attract more love and sex. I mean, at a very biological level, obviously, we are, you know, inclined to reproduce. But on a human behavior and fundamental level, we also seek love and business. And through your career or business, we earn money, and we earn money so that we can get stuff, and we get stuff so that we can show people how great we are, so that we can attract them for love and sex.
Why is sex still a taboo for most people?
I know that people they say that a lot, but actually I don't think it's as taboo as people keep saying that it is. We actually do talk about sex a lot. And if you look at all the media, magazines, movies, music lyrics, like it's all over the place. A day doesn't go by where somebody isn't talking about sex. So I actually find it a bit ironic that we call sex taboo and yet we are constantly talking about it.
Why do you think people are so afraid of seeing their sexual energy as something positive at work, instead of feeling that they are dirty, inappropriate, or even being accused of being manipulative?
I mean, I think it's because there's maybe a fine line there. That's why sexual intelligence is really important to learn, so that you know which parts of sexual energy that are appropriate and that you can leverage, as opposed to, say, sleeping your way to the top, or sexual things that fall into the category of sexual harassment and sexual violence, which we don't want to do, right? But we are sexual beings. It's part of our nature. And so, you know, closing that off, I don't think is the best way to go. So it's just, instead of people like not being 100% sure, because there's no, you know, step one, step two, step three, like 100% got it down, there's a bit of a gray area there. So then people just err on the side of caution.
How do you think that people are ready to flip the script on sex and start using their sexual intelligence in business to enrich their life, boost careers, and grow businesses?
I think that people are ready for transformation. There's definitely been a trend in the last 5 to 10 years of people realizing that learning and growing and enhancing and improving are important parts of life and to fulfillment. And so it's just about learning what all the different things that you can do. So what I hope from this book is that it can help people to flip that script, so that they can learn all of the things that they can do to boost their careers and grow their business via sexual intelligence.
Why do you think identity is contributing to conflicts in terms of sex and business?
Well, I mean, that is a big, big topic, but at the very base level, sometimes, so there's a lot of mixed opinions about this in the research world, but identity often, when you have a very strong identity, and certain, what that sort of precludes is that, you know, that there's othering involved. So if I identify with this and you don't, that means we can't be friends, or I'm in opposition to you. You know, if I'm a Democrat, that means I'm not a Republican. And so once you sort of stack up all of these different types of identities, you start to put yourself in certain groups that are in opposition to other groups. And then that breeds conflict as opposed to building bridges. And that has an effect in sex and business, because it affects how you build relationships, and relationships are everything in business.
Can you explain erotic capital and how to use sexual transmutation?
So those two things are a bit linked. It basically comes down to your sexual energy. So we all have a sexual energy by nature, and that sexual energy can be sort of ramped up or increased when you engage in different types of sexual or loving activity. And that could be everything from masturbation to just flirting to having a crush on someone, all the way to, you know, all sorts of sexual intercourse and other activities. And when you participate in those activities, it boosts your sexual energy. And so you get you're getting neurochemicals, and this like dopamine and norepinephrine and things that can give you lots of energy, give you lots of creativity. And so you want to leverage those things that trigger the good chemicals, so that you can do, 10x you can, it, like some people even say that, you know, when you really transmutate your sexual energy, you can get to the level of like genius activities.
If our listeners wish to buy a copy of your book, where should they go?
Well, you can start out at social media. So I'm on Facebook at Bobby Bedochka, as well as Twitter and Instagram. Also, it's available on Amazon right now and all like in 10 different countries. So you could just go to Amazon and type in the title of the book or even just my last name. I'm the only one in the world, so I come up. But I also, you can also find the link on my website, www.sexualintelligenceinbusiness.com.
Thank you for your interview today.
My pleasure, Sheila.
You have been listening to Bobby Bedochka speaking about her book, Sexual Intelligence in Business. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
This message is intended for all Quebecers. We must take extreme measures to curb the pandemic. Only essential services remain open. Gatherings are prohibited. It's forbidden to leave your home between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. These efforts aim to protect our healthcare workers, seniors, and loved ones. Let's comply with the lockdown and curfew to lower the risk of contracting COVID-19, because our health is important. For more information, visit quebec.ca/confinement. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
The alert level in your region or a neighboring region is red. To curb the spread of COVID-19, gatherings with family and friends are prohibited, and travel between regions should be avoided. In red zones, it's also forbidden to leave your home between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. Visit quebec.ca/coronavirus to learn more about the specific measures addressing the situation. Follow all the rules, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Following the despicable attack on January the 6th, there must be truth and accountability if we are going to move forward, heal, and bring our country together once again.
The historic second impeachment trial of Donald Trump begins today for inciting the deadly January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. We'll get the latest. Then, where's the vaccine for ableism? We'll speak to two disability rights activists about growing calls to prioritize giving COVID vaccines to people with physical and mental disabilities.
Vaccine equity must include disabled, chronically ill, and immunocompromised people.
Then, the United States has just deported 72 people to Haiti, including a 2-month-old baby, and 21 other babies and children, despite President Biden's vow to halt deportations for 100 days.
We are calling on President Biden to stop the deportation of Haitians in the middle of the uprising in Haiti. The inhuman, cruel, and draconian practice under President Trump cannot continue.
All that.